listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, and we wish you the best for the new year.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning to you, and as the ID at the top of the show suggested, Happy New Year. I think this is the first show back since the new year, because although it seems forever ago already, New Year's Day was just last week. I'm Robin.
I'm Rebecca.
And we will be hosting the show together. So this is Intravenous on Campus Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM, where we do broadcast on the unceded and ancestral territories of the Holkmeenam and Squamish speaking people. And we've got a show that is a little bit delayed in the pipe. To some extent, we're going to talk a little bit about an event that you, Rebecca, attended.
Yep.
Towards the end of December.
Yeah, it's my head. Time's a jumble at the moment. I think that always happens. Like the gap between Christmas and New Year, time ceases to exist. I'm pretty sure it was around just before we broke up for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I attended an online event that was held by Women Transforming Cities to do with one of their kind of like ongoing projects called the Hot Pink Paper Campaign. And they started that in 2022. So it was kind of like a 2-year progress report, what have they seen kind of go their way in what they were hoping, and what's maybe taken a couple steps backwards. And I say, like, talking about kind of what their policy asks were in this like brief, what's changed. And it was quite interesting because they had, I mean, I don't know of any organization like this in the UK where it's kind of holding your government, both like local and I guess federally as well, accountable, but it's a whole group of women doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than like say a mixed organization or just like anything else, it's just a whole group of women. And I thought it's a very admirable thing, I find. And yeah, it was very interesting to attend and listen to it. So I'm very excited to talk about it.
Cool. Yeah. So we're going to dig into a little bit about the sort of findings and some of the policy asks and those things. But as we do typically on Intravenous, just to give ourselves a little breath and, you know, fall into the midweek.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to hear from an artist, and you have brought a few to choose from. What are we going to hear?
I think a great song to start with, which I actually discovered the other day, is called Running Through Colors by Fantagram. I think it's a great song that might wake you up in the morning. It's got a bit of a nice beat to it. The other songs I brought are kind of a bit more slow. I feel like that might not be the best start, starting off slow and slowly drifting off.
All right. If you need your dancing shoes on, here we go.
Thank you.
kind of an abrupt stop to that one. Fantogram with a track called Running Through the Colors here on Intravenous, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, 90.1 FM on the terrestrial dial and cjsf.ca on the World Wide Web streaming and podcastable archived shows. I'm Robin.
I'm Rebecca.
And we're going to dig into our topic today, which is the event that happened sort of mid to endish December, just before the Christmas break for most folks. And it was the release of, or not the release, but sort of the accumulation and reporting upon the Hot Pink Paper campaign that Women Transforming Cities has as one of their main operatives. And Women Transforming Cities is a Vancouver-based organization that is sort of a watchdog in a way for policy matters that affect women and children's safety in terms of how do we make cities hospitable to women folk and those who might be more vulnerable. And so women and kids are the sort of hat wearers in that. But you know, when we look at what that means in terms of creating safety for women and children, it creates safety for a bunch of different populations also. And so even though their focus might sound narrowly defined, when we create safety for both of those groups of the demographic, then we're creating safety for a lot more people than that.
Yeah, and I think as well, they make it very clear as well, one thing about them is that they're not just focusing just like women and girls as an intersectional kind of focus within that as well. So they're kind of, I would say, like women, girls, kids is kind of their umbrella kind of term. And then they have like different policy asks and everything, focusing on more niche groups that come under that, like more specifically Indigenous women and girls. They've got a big focus. One of their main policy asks that they were talking about in this event was heavily focused to Indigenous women and girls, which is obviously a very disempowered community in Vancouver and British Columbia, Canada.
Yeah, extend.
Just keeps going. So their intersectionality as well, even though they are an all-female organization focusing on gender equity, there's a broader sense to it where they're focusing on the, it's kind of like the equality within gender equality.
Yes.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's part of what makes their work so encompassing, right? And really informative, because it does encapsulate that umbrella with the tentacles.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm seeing is like a jellyfish, right? Where you've got the main structure, and then you've got all of these tentacles that hang down that are part of the being, right? And it wouldn't be complete without them. But they're sort of subsidiary in a way. So the Hot Pink Paper campaign itself is an issue-based campaign that is meant to amplify the voices of communities who are not often or ever heard at City Hall. And it's meant to sort of challenge the public discourse and debate around city issues and center the folks who need the city to work for them the most. And, you know, that seems sort of like a strange mission because it's true in all the ways, but the city really does work for the people with money and the people where we think of, you know, building a city and building, you know, it's like it's so much development and it's so much money and power. And those aren't the people that the city hall needs to hear from, right?
It's like, welcome to the patriarchy.
And so they, and that's the Women Transforming Cities organization, they hold the mayor and the council to account in terms of the commitments that they make. And I'm sure that that's not an easy task. But they do it by, you know, graphing out things and really keeping track of, you know, what they said they would do and what their efforts have been along the way to either accomplish or just brush it under the carpet, and so that it's not being accomplished, kind of a way. And then they deliver a report, which was this event that you attended.
Yeah, one thing that I think it is, I would say, very kind of crucial in how they are doing this is the fact that they are keeping track and there's data and it's statistics and everything to back up what they're saying when they hold, obviously, these higher level people to account. It's almost, it seems kind of so simple that it's like, why is not maybe every city doing it, like globally, to hold people accountable? Because you often see there'll be people that like are sitting at home and they go, I don't know, on X, or they go on some social media and they start writing stuff being like, Dunda hasn't committed to this promise, blah, 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 blah. And you think, well, that's great that they haven't done that and you're calling them out on it, but you're one person just calling them out with nothing kind of backing it up. So they just brush it away because you're just a small voice in a mass of like what is social media.
Yeah.
Whereas here you have people actually just tracking. It's almost kind of stalkerish, but not stalkerish, kind of tracking your every move to make sure you are keeping your promises, which is what will ultimately, I think, make for a way better governing. Because the mayors and the local councils that are being they know that they're being watched by Women's Transforming Cities. Like, this isn't a kind of really small underground secret organization doing that. They're very vocal about it. So it's the fact that you know you're being watched in terms of how you're driving for equity for women and children that is going to make you keep to your promises way more than people en masse like X having like event about government not doing what they said they would do.
So the information is very substantiated with evidence. They're not just blowing the whistle with nothing behind them. And I think the other thing that makes them successful is that they continue to have a deep engagement with the community that is the city, right? And I say community as sort of one lump thing, and obviously it's communities in the plural, but the, you know, the community groups, the organizations that identify priority issues for the sort of subgroups, there's a lot of engagement. And so there isn't this hierarchical approach to what they're doing, right? It's very collaborative. It's very leaning in for input and listening with their ear on the ground to frontline workers and, you know, service providers about the needs of the things that they identify in their report, so that they can go back and create these policy asks to then track where the commitments and the promises either are or are not happening.
Yeah, because it's ultimately you need the engagement with the community, because it's them that are affected by the policies, and what it's going to be what they want. When you're in government, you're wanting to deliver to your community, because that's going to be where you get your support from anyway.
Yeah.
So you want to know what they want.
Yeah.
Type of thing, but yeah.
So some of the policy asks, I don't know if we'll get to all of them. There's
I think it was eight.
I was gonna say it looks like there's eight
it's
or
eight.
So.
Yeah. Eight main ones. Yep.
One of them that is that's interesting, and I think it's interesting to talk about in light of January being Sexual Assault Awareness Month here on campus, and the theme of it this year being empowering equitable workplaces.
Oh, okay.
And so one of the policy asks is an equity lens on council motions. And so thinking about, you know, how empowering an equity lens on council motions then is able to create equitable environments, whether that's your workplace or whether that's the housing complex you live in or the city that you live in as it extends outward, right? It's all the same, you know. It needs the same framework in order to come into our reality. And so the commitment that they're asking for is to direct staff to develop an equity assessment tool to be included in all council member motions, which would require councillors to consider the impact of motions and policies on equity-deserving residents before introducing and voting on them. And so, holy smokes, can you imagine if we actually gave some forethought into...
Yeah.
Gave some forethought into the things that we propose before, you know, and really contemplating how this may or may not affect different communities that might be touched by this motion or this policy, right?
Yeah, it almost, to me, that kind of policy ask almost seems to be thinking, wait, we're not doing that already? Type of thing, to think like, what are going to be the impacts of a policy proposal or something that you propose to be in law, to not be thinking of the impacts of every member of the community that you're proposing it for as an already kind of baseline is what I would have thought.
Yeah.
So to me, I was kind of thinking, wow, that has to be asked for now. Well, back in 2022 when it was like given, because it seems like such a, I don't know, like the first thing you should be doing in terms of thinking, right, I have this proposal. Who is it going to affect in this community and why? Is it going to affect them in a good way or a bad way? If it's in a bad way, how can we maybe limit it or prevent it or something? But apparently not.
It's interesting because what it makes me think about is this book that I read last year. I read it last year. And it was called Imagining a Manifesto. Imagination, a Manifesto by Ruha Benjamin. And what she was talking about is this idea that unless we can imagine ourselves out of the current paradigm that we're in, Right? Imagine other people's experiences and what the impact is on what we're imagining, then nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing is going to shift for the better and for us to be living within a more equitable space through that equitable lens. And so this prompt to imagine how people who are disenfranchised or, you know, equity deserving that aren't seeing equity, how they're being impacted, and to force forethought into that process is a process of sort of reimagining what a society or what a system could look like when these things are put into place. Mm. And I think that is such a hard practice, and probably why it hasn't been put into place up until now, and why that's such a crucial ask, and why it's at the top of the list also.
Yeah, definitely. Because I also, with it being at the top of the list, that's probably, I would say, you commit to that policy. Not like everything else will fall into place, but it might make it easier. Yeah. It sort of like would be what makes it easier for everything else to kind of slot into a bit more of a more equity and more equitable environment if you commit to the first one. Because that kind of will overarch all the other policies if you put that in place.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The second policy ask is for the Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit People's Healing Lodge to become a reality. And I think this has been a conversation. I don't even want to hasten to guess how long, but I think it's been longer than 2022
has
been a conversation. There was a proposed site, I think, and there's been some, I don't want to say mock-ups, but there were some example longhouses put up as part of a festival that it was this is what it could maybe sort of look like. Mm. I might be talking completely out of my own imagination, but I don't think so. It just isn't all that clear in the bubbliness of morning and all the other information that swims around in our heads. But nonetheless, building on the City of Vancouver's decision to develop and implement a plan to advance the city's response to the national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, calls for justice and for them to, adhere to the Red Woman Rising Report recommendations. And one of those ways is to prioritize the creation of a grassroots-led Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit People's Healing Lodge.
Mm.
I know it's complicated when the city is trying to sort of partner and collaborate and co-create something with an Indigenous nation or with three Indigenous nations, which all have their own idea. And so it's, you know, you've got these four parties at the table with different ideas about, you know, what it looks like and what it needs to do and how much money everybody's got to contribute and, you know, what happens within that and who's got jurisdiction and, you know, blah, 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 blah. How However, when there's power and intention and motivation, I think, to do something and get something done, these things can happen. Mm. You know, land can be appropriated. Mm. You know, like it seems like sometimes the city puts these brakes on, mm-hmm. and they're maybe real, but maybe not real.
Yeah.
And I suspect that because the Indigenous women and girls, or the missing Indigenous women and girls issue has been longstanding, and, you know, talk about an equity deserving demographic,
yeah,
and underrepresented in terms of action, mm-hmm. across the country. It's not, you know, Vancouver is by no means the plucked out as an example. They're just following an example that everybody else is leading. Then it's easy to not know where to start,
or yeah.
to not start, because there's little momentum happening elsewhere about the about the issue.
I think as well, I mean, it's obviously been kind of labeled as a very significant issue for, I would say, from the communities, if it's second on the list as the policy asks, but it also ties in to the what was it called? The Battered Women's Support Services seminar that CGSF attended, where we, I can't remember what week, but we listened to sound bites